welcome to Hot Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, weekly podcast for the haunted attraction and haunted entertainment community. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. And indeed, we are coming at you, once again, live on Sunday, recorded on Monday, whichever you listen to. We're just glad to have you.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for choosing to spend an hour of your week with us.
Yes.
Always, through all this business going on, and probably after, honestly,
right,
we're going to be doing these recordings live Sunday at 8 p.m. You can find those at facebook.com/hauntweekly. Follow us, like us there, get apprised of when we go live. That way you can jump in the chat and be a participant in this podcast. You can also find us at twitter.com/hauntweekly. We're on hauntweekly.com is our main website. And we are also at youtube.com/hauntweekly. That is our YouTube channel, which is where basically you'll find the entire back catalog of episodes, mm-hmm. all 253 now, I think is what we're up to.
Right.
No, 255. 255, I believe. So all episodes are there. Definitely check it out. And also, while you're hanging around, one of the things we've been doing is every week or so, we've been trying to bring you some interesting resources while we're in quarantine, things you can do from the comfort of your sofa.
Right.
We have consolidated all those onto our COVID-19 page at COVID.com/COVID-19, all one word, all lowercase. All the links are there. I'm updating it hopefully tomorrow with the links that Japes has provided us and also a few additional links we found. So that page is just going to keep growing over time with new things and new things to do and see.
Yes. It's a living document.
It is a little...
So, if you have suggestions,
yes,
please send them to us, because again, we would love to add them to it.
Once again, Haunt Weekly on Twitter, Haunt Weekly on Facebook, or just use the contact form at hauntweekly.com. All valid ways to get in touch with us. We're easy to get in touch with. We're very chill.
Mm-hmm.
We're super cash. Super cash. Super cash. Super cash. All right. So, yes, indeed. The topic this week... Well, first off, the question of the week...
Yes.
Question for the audience. How dare I forget the question?
I know. I've already got, one answer.
I know. So, question for the audience. What is something you wish you knew how to do better? And I love this question because nobody does everything mm-hmm. in the haunt industry. Nobody. So, what is something you wish you personally knew how to do better? Crystal, what is your thought on that?
I would like to be better at pneumatics type stuff.
Yeah.
I'd like to be able to, find ways to get things activated. Sorry, I thought you were going to go first,
Sorry.
And I was reading comments so that I could, be prepared to tell you our audience's answer.
Sorry, okay. Well, my answer is somewhat similar. I'd put pneumatics on the list, too, but I would also put more of the electronics. I'm always blown away by what this industry does with some Raspberry Pis.
Right.
And just, I can't solder for shit. Let's just be honest. My soldering is an embarrassment to Queen and Country.
Mm-hmm.
Freddie Mercury hates my soldering. No, I'm just get it, Queen and Country.
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Puns.
Yes. You haven't been doing them every day for a while.
But yeah, my soldering is an embarrassment. I'm deeply ashamed of my lack of skill there. I think I have burned myself more times than I've successfully soldered anything.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably literally true. So I wish I was better with that type of stuff. Also, I would add makeup for me. There's a reason our haunt is very mask dependent is because we don't do a lot of makeup work.
Well, and the thing is that you actually are the only person who wears a mask.
Yeah.
But the rest of us don't have a lot of makeup on. We do a little bit of this and that, but it is something that we could stand to improve definitely.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah. Japes agrees with us on the makeup. He has also said he would like to be better at costume design, which is something that,
I can agree with that one too. I think I can mention that as a flaw, a weakness I have too.
Yeah.
Not that I think. That, once again, that's not an area we spend a lot of time with, and maybe we should spend more with. But when you're running a home haunt in particular, you got to make sacrifices.
Yeah.
You got to make decisions. And so, yeah, we definitely could do better there.
Yeah,
I agree.
And my brother, Elliot, if you're reading in the chat, said makeup and acting. So definitely something to look up. I think all three of us have said makeup now.
Yeah, I think maybe what we should do, since it seems to be a theme, everyone's saying makeup. Maybe what we should do is find someone that's actually an expert on makeup, bring them on here.
Yeah.
You know, the rule of getting people smarter than us to talk to us. Not difficult to find those people.
Yeah.
But bring them here to tell us ways in which noobs like us can up our game quickly and easily.
Right.
Maybe that'd be some good. Maybe that's a topic idea, you see? Boom, 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 boom.
So, yes, I was just thinking that we should tell my brother that since he is doing all of this painting and learning airbrush skills with miniature paintings, that maybe he could do it on faces.
Yeah, maybe he could translate some of those skills at least. Probably need some different equipment, but you need some different equipment. You don't want to just put the miniature paint in someone's eyes. Don't see that going very well.
No.
But I see the skills potentially overlapping.
Exactly.
All right. So, yes, we'll come back if there's more suggestions on that front later. We'll come back to it at the end of the podcast.
Yes.
All right, guys. So this week's topic is 10 things the haunt industry needs to do to grow. Now, this seems like a weird topic right now because with everything going on, with all the business going on. Oh, and real fast, we do have two items in news we have to cover real fast.
Yes.
Too sorry. I didn't put these in the notes, and that's my fault.
Yeah.
I forgot to add them.
I had it up here.
Okay. First.
Yes.
Is Fear Factory in Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
We had said last week that we were going to have someone give us an idea of how it went, because and I got a look. It's Froggy Jack from his own pod, the Froggy Jack podcast. Neat guy. We talk on Twitter. He was going to go, and he was going to report back how it went and what all the protections were and how it was different, because he's from that area. He knows. He would have a very good handle on it. Unfortunately, Fear Factory was not able to open this weekend.
Yeah.
Salt Lake City was put under an 8 p.m. curfew. They were not able to open.
Yeah.
So the halfway to Halloween celebration did not work. And you know, like I said when we talked about it initially, if you're going to do a haunt opening right now, they were doing everything they could to make it as safe as possible. Mm-hmm. So if you agree there's any way a haunt should be open right now, they were doing it as well as could be done. And the other item, I'll leave it to you.
And then...
Because you've got it up.
Yes. Ellie told us about this earlier. There was a haunt actor at the Wilmington Haunted Hollow Ride who basically said a lot of things in his personal page. The haunt found out about it.
He said Nazi shit.
Yes.
Like literal Nazi shit.
Yes. He is Nazi shit.
Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
No.
No hyperbole here. It was Nazi shit.
Yeah. So.
And I love is I'm only a Nazi in my spare time.
Yeah, that was his excuse. It's only in my personal page.
Only my personal time.
You guys loved me. Why did you fire me over this? Well, we've been in a similar situation.
Yes, we have.
We'll go into this more next week.
Yeah, next week's a news episode.
Yeah.
And by then we should have more details. This is still kind of an unfolding thing. Next week we'll have more details. But yeah, so next week is a news episode. We'll do a deeper dive into this and other things that have been going on, and probably also the Fear Factory situation.
Right.
But yeah, those are just two things urgently to get out. Is it okay to talk about the topic now? I've had to stop twice because I keep forgetting things. Once because I don't know how to read, and once because I don't know how to write. Anyways, talking about, so it seems like a weird time to be talking about things the haunt industry needs to do to grow. And I get that. Haunts are thinking about survival. They're thinking about getting through this year and the next year. But here's the thing. Times of upheaval and times of certainty are among the best times to make drastic changes. It's very difficult to shift the turn the ship much at all whenever things are going at least okay. You know?
Yeah.
If you're not pointed at an iceberg, you tend not to move the ship much, you know? So these are changes that we can start looking at making and innovating as we go through this, so we come out the other side in a better position. Because, and the C also here is episodes 174 and 175. We did back-to-backers.
Yes.
On reasons the haunt industry is in trouble.
Right. Go ahead.
Reasons the haunt industry is in trouble and reasons it's doing great. And I really learned so much researching those episodes.
Right.
I cannot emphasize, I think those are two of my favorite episodes. Both of them are really good, and they were very well received. I was blown away by how well they both were received. And they're definitely two of the most important we've done, and everything in there holds up, and I tried not to do too much overlap with those. But definitely it's a callback. And one of the things I learned in researching that episode is just how small the haunt industry is.
Right.
Just how small. I mean, basically one of the things I learned is that the entirety of the haunted attraction industry brings in less revenue than one modest movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, we're kind of a niche on a niche on a niche in some ways. And if we want to break free from that and come out and do more and get bigger, we might have to change the way we think about the industry some. And that's what this post, this episode is about. So yeah, everything in those episodes holds up. Definitely go back. It's 174, 175. All right. You want to take the first ones?
Yeah. I'm
Yeah, you're doing your job. You're doing good.
Well, not for the people listening. They don't get to hear me as much anymore, and I'm sorry about that.
I'm sorry too, actually. But no, you're handling the chat right now a little bit and keeping things going there.
So yeah.
You're doing great work, and I'll start the first one off, and you can take the second.
That's fine.
How's that?
That sounds good.
First off, stop the consolidation and save middle-class haunts. It's kind of a slash thing because these two things are related. Right now, our industry is consolidating right in front of our eyes. And by consolidating, I mean haunts are closing and haunts are being bought out, and increasingly we're seeing a handful of large companies and large haunters that are dominating whole regions of the country in some cases,
right,
or even going national, and middle-class, middle-tier haunts are really struggling. Charity haunts seem to be doing okay-ish, I don't know. I have not heard too much about it, but it seems to be the standalone middle-class haunts are really struggling.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. And we've talked about that in an episode, too. I couldn't find it in my quick search. But we have talked about how, you know, they're kind of dying out. The smaller haunts are dying out. And the ones that are geared more towards teens.
Yeah.
Like younger teens.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't as many of the old type spook houses around.
Yeah. And the reasons for this are legion. I mean, basically, the rising cost of dealing with fire codes, increased competition in the area in many cases is part of the issue. The cost of this, the middle-tier haunts have to pay for actors,
mm-hmm.
where charity haunts obviously get free labor.
No.
So they struggle to pay everyone in the staff a haunt. There's a million different reasons why this is happening. And we need to find solutions to prevent that and support that community. And it's going to come down, a lot of it may come down to simply relocating some of these haunts. Right now, we have some very, very tight hotbeds of action and some places that are thirsty for haunts.
Yeah.
So there may need to be some relocation. We may need to spread our wings a little bit. But like when we went to the Houston trip last year, I didn't know this when we were there, but if we had been there apparently like 2 years before or 3 years before, we would have had about double the haunts to choose from. They had a severe reduction in number. They went from 10, I think, on one part of town to 5. And this seems to be a thing where they were just in a contraction and fewer haunts were able to open.
Right.
So this doesn't bode well for our industry long term, because the more consolidated we get, yeah, that's great for these big haunts that are having tens of thousands of guests every year and are blowing the doors off and making lots of money. But that still means fewer people working in the industry, fewer haunts are available, less selection for customers. We've got to find a way to stop this retraction. Because, you know, otherwise we're going to be a very homogenized industry pretty quick.
Yeah, that's very true. And, you know, it's frustrating to see, and it's hard to predict in the climate we're in what we're going to look like in even a year.
Yeah.
You know, it's really
even
hard.
Even 6 months. I mean,
exactly. Yeah, that's kind of the...
Yeah, I mean... You know. Yeah, I know it seems like all the news attention's gone away from COVID-19. Oh, it could be back in a second, though. It could be back in just any second now. We're still very much in a time of upheaval of our industry, of the world, for that matter. It's not just our industry, obviously.
No.
But...
if you haven't turned on the news in a while... you may want...
What sleep medicine are you using? Yeah. I would like some.
Yeah. You may either want to completely avoid it, because if you're at peace of mind without knowing what's going on. But, you know, for those of us who are in the know.
Could you imagine falling into a coma Christmas 2019 and waking up right now?
No.
How long are you out? Oh, I was out 5 months. Oh, that's not too bad. I didn't miss that much. Oh, you missed a shit ton.
Yeah.
You missed a thing or 20.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Number two. Oh, sorry. You're doing number two.
I am doing number two. Expand to other seasons. This is something that we've talked about
all the time. We've mentioned this one 100 times at least.
Yeah. But especially in tourist areas, people are already coming to your area all the time. Why not set up a year-round haunt? You've got to grow the industry when you're close. It's hard to grow it whenever you're close 10 months out of the year.
Yeah.
Because people forget about you until Halloween, you know?
Yeah.
They just do. Need to learn lessons from current year-round haunts. And there was episode 191.
Yes, when we talked with Shelby.
Yes, when we talked with Shelby about that from Galveston.
Yes.
From
Pirates of the Coast / I forgot, Mayfield Manor.
Mayfield Manor, yes.
I got it. Ha ha, I did remember.
Yeah. Yeah, so even though haunts are expanding into holiday events, that's not really a year-round thing.
Yeah.
That's not a...
And that's not something, like I said, you can do in every area.
Right.
But I'm blown away to this day that... been haunting in New Orleans. We've been in the sea for 20 years. We've been haunting for 15 of them.
Yeah.
And there's no year-round haunt in the city.
No.
There are other...
There are tales that there was one once.
Yeah, there was, but it was 90s, I think. You know.
Yeah.
But there's not one now, and it's bizarre to me because there's so much tourism. I mean, basically, you could easily run a haunt that's open 10 months out of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And make it like any other year-round haunt. You minimize the number of actors. You reduce the size and scope of it a little bit. Focus on storytelling. Focus on marketing and branding. You can do a lot. And, yeah, this is something that you can definitely make work in an area like your Galveston, obviously, with Shelby's haunt, was able to do it. So I don't see why New Orleans couldn't. And we've seen a year-round haunt in San Antonio that blah, 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 Ripley's haunt.
Yeah, and the Ripley's are the most common year-round haunts in tourist areas.
Yeah. But they also give a good template for how it can work. You know, you go through them, you realize they've really streamlined this process. They've made it so that they can run all very few actors. So often just one actor.
Right.
And they've really, you know, honed in on making this thing efficient and able to run 8 hours. But yeah, go back and listen to episode 191, because Shelby made some points in there that I never thought about.
Yeah.
Like how stuff keeps breaking.
Yeah.
Why didn't I think of that? Of course it keeps breaking it when you use it year-round.
Because it gets a lot more use than something that's open for a month and a half.
Yeah. It's like, holy God, she's right. That stuff keeps breaking and wearing out because it's not designed for 365 a year operation.
Yes, my dad didn't build it. Because...
Yeah, but no, go back.
We talked about his overbuild.
191, excellent episode. Shelby sets it right.
Yeah.
Number three, and this is related, obviously, expand to other markets. Obviously, escape rooms and axe throwing are big right now, but here's the thing, not every haunt can do that, especially as a year-round operation. Rise, a very good haunt in this area, closed their escape rooms. They had very good escape rooms.
They did. In fact,
they had my favorite escape room.
They were so good that the 13th Gate bought some of them.
Yeah.
So.
Now, they had amazing rooms, and now they're relocated. Thankfully, the rooms themselves still exist.
Right.
Mercifully, heavenly, yes. But they couldn't maintain it, and the reason was their location didn't really support escape rooms. If you wanted to come from either Baton Rouge or New Orleans, you were staring at an hour drive, and in either city you had escape rooms of similar-ish caliber very close by.
Right. And well, and
you're not going to get New Orleans tourists to drive to Tickfall, Louisiana.
No, not in the off-season especially.
Mm-mm.
I think that I know one person that's made that trip, and that's because they were there when the haunt was open. They went with us, actually, for paintball.
Yeah.
Zombie paintball when they had that still. So this was a while ago.
Yeah.
They
replaced it with a hayride, yeah.
Yeah, it always amazes me when we go to the little towns outside of Tickfall,
mm-hmm.
how they don't know that they're is a haunted house.
Big, huge haunted house with
like 10 minutes away.
Three attractions, yeah. Soon to be four or five, I believe. I mean, I don't know what the exact plans are, but
yeah, we'll have to
find out. But no, big, huge haunted house, all these attractions, 10 minutes away. Yeah, like literally, we have a tradition of stopping at that gas station right off I-55
mm-hmm.
on the way there. We stop there every time to get drinks, couldn't use the bathroom because after that drive, you're probably busting for a pee. And so we have a tradition of stopping there. It's a neat little gas station anyway. But we stopped there, and a couple of times we've said, hey, yeah, we're going to the haunted house nearby. There's a haunted house nearby?
Yeah, and they're actually...
It's literally like right there.
They're on the same road. Yeah. They're only a mile and a half away or something.
Hang a left.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Exactly.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Anyways, neither here nor there, though.
Mm-mm.
All right. But yeah, basically, we need to find things that are low cost, high profit, and ideally can be year round. Escape rooms won't work in every location. Axe throwing won't work in every location. Those rooms where you go when you break a bunch of things won't work in every location.
That would be so much fun.
It would. I've been
to have the. And what we're talking about are the
rooms
where you... Scream rooms.
I think they're called scream rooms.
Safety goggles and hammers.
And smash plates.
That could be very cathartic to go in and see a bunch of haunt props that aren't working anymore anyway.
Yeah.
You can make money off people smacking the crap out of them.
And if you're going into one of those rooms, a suggestion, if you're an Apple Watch user, start an exercise before you go in.
Or if you use any physical fitness.
Yeah, any physical fitness. Start an exercise on your physical fitness track before you get in.
Yeah.
Trust me, you'll probably find it to be a very, very hearty exercise.
Yeah.
Even if you are used to doing some serious cardio.
Yeah.
But basically, even if you remain seasonal, there's a need to expand to the second, third, and fourth lines of business.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been seeing a lot of the bigger haunts getting better about this, but there's still plenty of haunts that I go to. Like on the Atlanta trip we went to, we visit all those haunts. There was only one or two that really entered any kind of second line of business at all.
Yeah.
Pretty much every single one is bam, bam, bam. You go to haunt, you leave. Go to haunt, leave. Netherworld had a whole big whoop-de-doo in the parking lot with dozens of lines out of business. But you go to, like, Folklore, you go to those other haunts nearby, is go to haunt, leave, go to haunt, leave, go to haunt, leave. We got to stop that.
Right.
When someone buys a ticket and then leaves, it's a failure, not a success.
Mm-hmm.
This is your opportunity to capture more revenue and to make them happier.
Yeah.
Because think about it like this. I mean, someone explained upselling to me like this. Say you're at a hardware store and you buy a ceiling fan,
mm-hmm.
right? You're buying a ceiling fan and the guy comes up and says, whoa, do you have the proper mounting bracket for that? Well, no, I didn't know. Well, here you go. Now you've sold them a mounting bracket and they don't have to take a second trip.
Yeah. So I heard the same hardware example, except with paint.
Okay.
Oh, what are you painting?
Yeah.
You know, do you need a scraper? Do you need sanding? Do you need, you know, drop cloths? Do you need the tacky stuff to get all the dust off the walls?
Upselling when done right is a win-win. You're giving the customer a better experience and capturing more money. So we need to get better at that. Customers shouldn't be buying a ticket and leaving. Pretty much ever. And it doesn't, like I said, I don't really care how happy they are. I mean, yeah, okay, we want them to be happy. But obviously we want them to be happy. But we need them to, we can make them happier and capture more money at the same time with more lines of business. Next item up for bid. This one's yours.
Yes, I know. Continue into international expansion. We've already started with this. There are haunts in Dubai, Japan, India.
They're all becoming increasingly common in Canada. I've heard about a few in Australia now.
Yeah.
Which Australia blew my mind.
Right. A few in the UK that are started. And they have an easier time making it year-round because Halloween isn't as much of a thing.
Yeah, you don't have that association with Halloween being an October thing. They are up for spooky shit pretty much year-round.
Right. Yeah.
And also, a lot of these towns are also doubling as tourist markets. Like when we were in England, we would go to like Edinburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, there were haunted attractions advertised at us. We unfortunately couldn't go because of where they were located. And, in fact, we had very limited time.
Yeah, we only had a day in there.
And we were basically mostly doing a castle tour. By the way, Edinburgh Castle, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
It's
nice, but it's... Okay, so it did not compare to the day before.
No.
But hardly anything could have.
Yeah, that's true. But it's too Disney World-esque. Though, I gotta say, talking to the Gunner... was one of the highlights of the trip.
Yeah, the Gunner and the Kilt
People. Guy. Yep. Yeah, there's some awesome stuff there.
And
don't get me
beautiful.
Wrong. And it is gorgeous. But yeah, if you're into like ruined castles and things like that, Edinburgh's going to disappoint.
Yeah.
But anyways, got off track really bad.
That's okay.
But still, haunted houses are still primarily a Canadian and American thing.
Right. It's,
this is the type of real IRL experience that can go well just about anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, okay, it might be a little difficult to explain in countries that don't have Halloween at all what this is and what the point of it is. But you know, go back to the podcast we had with Margie Kerr. Go read her works. Loving and enjoying the adrenaline rush of safe fear is almost universal. It's one of the things that transcends culture. It's biological in nature. And I just kicked over our thermosel. But anyways, it's biological. So
yeah.
This is something that can go anywhere. It just takes more work, and that international expansion would be huge for us.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, this one's obviously a big one for me.
Yes.
Stop stealing other people's IP. My yep. God. Come up with your own ideas. Come up with your own stories. Come up with your own characters.
And if you aren't creative in that way, hire someone with a contract in place to help you come up with original ideas.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. The only reason there hasn't been more suits. There's been some cease and desist letters, I know.
Right.
But the only reason we haven't been sued is because we're too small to really worry about.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, the movie studios, like I said, one decent blockbuster trumps the entire haunted attraction industry in terms of revenue. That's mind-boggling. But, I mean, one of the Avengers movies grossed like over $1.2 billion or something like that.
Yeah.
And the haunted industry was estimated to half that.
Yeah.
So we're not even talking like the big blockbusters, Trump. No, just even a modest one.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. We need original IP to grow. We are limited in our growth based upon our IP. If we use other people's IP, we're always going to appear to be second tier. We're always going to be second rate. We're going to be the second rate horror experience.
Yeah.
Come up with your own stories, your own narratives, your own ideas. And then you have the chance to go head-to-head with those narratives and create your own and get those in the mind of customers as something uniquely yours, something you also own and can control and market directly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I get really frustrated when I go to some very good, very big haunts, some very big professional commercial haunts, and there's 8 bajillion Pennywises or...
Yeah.
Or no Freddy's kidding. And Jason's and all that stuff. And it's like, guys... We have so much we can do.
Yeah, and even some of our favorite haunts use movie tropes and put in scenes from movies specifically because they love that movie.
Yeah.
But I think it takes away from it. It takes you out of the experience.
And whenever I've brought it up, one of the things I've always heard is, oh, we do it because customers expect it.
Yeah.
Well, the customer expects it because you trained them to expect it.
Right.
Our whole industry is about messing with expectations.
Yeah.
Guys, come on. Start
exactly.
messing with some expectations. That poor thermosel doesn't have a chance.
No.
Move it over there. Now it's away from kicking range.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Next week I'll put it near me.
All right. I'll take the next one, actually.
Yeah. I was going to say, the next one you should probably take.
Okay.
These landed back to back.
Yeah, I know. Number six is related to it, actually. That's why they're very connected.
It is. And it's also what got us thinking about this episode, talking about it.
Now, when I originally wrote this, let me backtrack here a second. I want to make it very clear I'm not calling anyone specific out.
No.
As I've learned in recent weeks, there is a tendency for people to take stuff a little personally sometimes. So I don't want that. No one in particular is getting called out here. I'm calling out a mindset in our industry.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to change our cult of worship in order to better serve our industry.
Yeah.
No individuals are being called out today. If I want to call you out, I'll call you out later. But this ain't the episode for it.
No.
All right. Number six was originally be youth-led.
Right.
Because, I mean, we have an industry where we have some great stalwarts that have been in this industry for 30, 40, whatever years. They're very proud of how long they've been in this industry. And so on and so forth.
But it is an achievement.
It is an achievement. There's no doubt. And there's a place for experience where experience matters. Please don't get it twisted. But I look at industries that are growing,
mm-hmm.
and I realize there's a lot younger faces at the forefront of it. And one of the examples, even though I'm not particularly happy with him on a personal level right now, is Elon Musk. He's at the front of a bunch of growing industries, both automotive, space exploration, electricity, so on and so on and so on. And then I looked it up, and he's 48.
But he started a lot of that stuff younger.
But it's also worth noting that it's apparently easy to look young when you're a robot.
Yeah.
It's kind of a cheat code.
Sorry, I jumped in on your joke.
Yes, you did. It's okay, though. But the point of the matter is, it's not the youth, it's the innovation that's important. Old people, us old fuckers can innovate, too. Because I originally was thinking we need people younger than even us.
Yeah.
Like, we're mathematically, we're 40.
Yeah, exactly.
I was thinking we need people late 20s into the 30s in that range.
Yeah.
I was thinking we're too old, really, to be in any way the voice of the industry. But I realized after looking up some names of people I was thinking of that age really isn't the main issue.
No.
And
it's staying up with current
things.
Current things.
And doing new things.
It's trying to push boundaries.
And that's just it, is we tend in this industry to fetishize years of service. I've been haunting for X number of years.
We just said it earlier tonight.
Yeah, and I just said it. I've been doing it for 15 years. I mean, I just walked into my own trap.
Yeah.
And, you know, I acknowledge I do it too.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be a mindset we have to flip. The years of service aren't necessarily important. It's what did you do? If you've been around for 30 years and you're still pitching the same ideas and the same business design, other ideas that you were 30 years ago, you're not innovating. It's we need to move on. And that's one of the frustrations is you go to haunted attraction conferences, you hear speeches that tout the exact same approaches to opening a haunt, designing a haunt, financing a haunt, all these things, and we need to be innovation-led. I've heard, I think, the exact same talks half a dozen or more times.
Yeah, and we've been to lots of talks on room design and how to build your haunt from scratch, but they don't compare. I am going to call one person out.
Okay.
They don't compare with the absolute genius design that is Hell's Gate.
No, that's not a calling out. That's a shout out. There's a difference.
Well, there's a shout out. Okay, I'm shouting out.
Like, okay, yep. I want to be like...
I'm naming names.
Basically, you know. And no, it was the turning point for me and my philosophy on haunting was that tour at Hell's Gate. I've only come to realize how much it meant to me, like in hindsight.
Mm-hmm.
But I sat there in all these like design talks, and then I did that tour behind the scenes Hell's Gate 2 years ago, was it?
Yeah.
And we went as part of the Lost Souls Chicago bus tour. Excellent tour. Japes is awesome. I know I say it I say it all the time. Saying it again. Don't care. Some things are worth repeating. And we did the behind the scenes tour. John LaFlamboy took us on a tour. And my mind was blown because you got to realize this was a haunt he built from beyond the ground up.
Right.
You can't even say ground up because he had to take the trees out first. Well, he had to take the ground up, then put the ground down, then build ground up.
Right. Exactly.
So he did that. And it's like, name a haunt design problem you likely have. Do you have an issue with security? They've got a solution. Do you have an issue with customers getting bunched together? They've got a solution.
Right.
Do you have
They've got flow worked out.
Do you have an issue getting actors comfortably in the scenes? They've got an issue for that.
Yeah.
They got a solution for that. It's like, and they have all these solutions and all this great innovation in there, and yet I don't hear as much conversation about the design that went into it.
Yeah, why did I have to see it for myself without hearing about it first?
Yeah. Why was the first place I heard from it there and not at any number of haunted attraction conferences I went to?
Yeah. Why weren't people talking about this? Because it really is mind-blowing. And
that design...
We'll have to talk about it some other time.
The approach he used... And I want to try to reach out to him and see if we can get him on. I know we've tried before and it didn't work out timing-wise. We maybe need to try again.
Yeah.
But man, the design is so good and so innovative. And the thing is, we went through it as customers first.
Yeah.
And then we went back on the behind-the-scenes tour after the fact. And on the behind-the-scenes tour after the fact, it's like, oh, that's why that's there.
Yeah.
That's why...
I'm
there,
it's
like
everything makes sense.
It's like
everything makes sense in that haunt for where it is.
And it's literally just about perfect. I mean... It's so innovative, but yet so simple at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I hate that was how I first learned about those principles.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there was only like a few dozen of us there.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those were not haunters. They were just haunt lovers. They were the aficionados, if you will.
Exactly.
And hey, once again, podcast for you. But in the same breath, more haunters need to see that too. Because this is the type of thing that can really push the industry forward.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
And speaking of innovation, we need to innovate some new experiences.
Yeah.
Especially with all the things that are going on, especially this COVID-19 stuff, we need to find ways to give customers new experience.
Yeah, and it just happens that our chat is actually talking about this right now.
Oh.
They're talking about... Bill Ritchie is talking about the possibility of more outside haunts, outside attractions taking off more post-COVID.
You know, the outside attractions, the problem is climate, obviously.
Right.
Like here, I'm surprised we don't have more outdoor attractions in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Honestly, because October's not the rainy season.
It's not.
No, it's the rainy season about 2 months later and 2 months before.
Yeah, exactly.
But a month before and 2 months.
So it's hard to build it. You know, it's time to build it. But
if there's a dry season in New Orleans, haunt season fits in it pretty neatly.
Yeah.
If you can call it the dry season. But anyways, so yeah, I'm surprised we don't have more. I mean, Rise has the trail they've added, the hayride, rather. But that's the only one. Well, I take that back. There's the hayride we went on North Shore. I'm trying to remember the name of it.
I don't remember the name of it. It's a Red Barn or something?
Yeah, I think that was it. I think it was Red Barn, yeah.
Something like that. And then there was one up in Monroe, but it closed.
Oh, and there was also the corn maze one. The Country Cajun Corn Maze. So we do have a few, but they're all North Shore.
Right.
That's the thing. They're all North Shore. We're on the South Shore side of the lake. So, yeah. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. That's a good idea. Switching to more outdoor experiences. It's good for COVID, but also it addresses a lot of those issues that are harming middle-class, middle-tier haunts.
Right.
You don't have to have fire sprinklers outside.
Yeah. It depends.
Depends, that's true. Depends. Someone was told that to make all the corn fire retardant.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, you still have to be able to put out fires.
Yeah, but you don't have to have... It's easier to put fire extinguishers and fire suppression around an open field than it is, though, doing the retrofit a building, especially a historical building in many cases, with fire sprinklers.
Yeah.
So it's things to think about. But yeah, we've got to find new experiences that we can give people because we are a luxury industry and we're facing a likely recession, possibly even depression.
Yeah.
Just the truth. And here's the thing. Everyone's like, we're recession-proof. Really?
No.
Really? You think so? Because here's the deal. For the cost of just one ticket to a haunt, like I go to like mortuary. I don't know why I'm picking on them.
Because we just saw we've been cleaning and we found an old ticket for mortuary.
Oh God,
but when they were $15.
Cost of a current mortuary ticket and the 10 to 15 minute walkthrough, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get because of based upon the size of the location.
Yeah.
I can get an entire month of Hulu and Netflix.
Yeah.
That about right?
Yeah.
So where do you think I'm going to cut my entertainment expenses? Right. Throw in Shudder, honestly, probably, because I can get my horror fix, too. And maybe even that Full Moon Cinema package. It's like 30 cents a month or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not much. But yeah, I mean, no, we are a luxury industry facing a recession and depression. We are not recession-proof, no matter what people tell you. When people are hurting and money gets truly tight, they will take their money out there to find cheaper haunts and charity haunts, or they will find other experiences to fill that void that are more cost-advantaged.
Yeah, and I bet if you open up a charity haunt or change your charity to one that helps people who were affected by COVID, you know, either because they were out of work or they had it and you know, weren't able to, they do exist.
Yeah.
There are places that you can donate to that. So if you gear your charity towards that, I bet this year more people would choose you over a pro haunt.
Yeah. And if we can't give something new coming up very soon, we, as an industry, may be in deep trouble 2021 and 2022.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I think there's enough pent-up demand, and I don't think any economic fallout is going to be strong enough come October to really make 2020 a disaster, if we're able to open, if we're not in the midst of this horrible second wave. Obviously, we can't predict what's going to happen.
Right.
But if we're able to open in October, I think it will be at least a potentially good year, or potentially okay year. It may be limited on capacity. That could hurt us. but I think the economic demand will be there. Mm-hmm. 2021 and 2022, if we can't provide something unique and compelling, we're going to be in trouble. Now, this is the one I have the least advice on.
Yeah.
I don't know what these in-person experiences should be like or could be like, but yeah, this is something we got to think about.
Yeah.
Okay. Now go.
Okay. Make money digitally. So right now, most haunts are lucky if they sell physical tickets and merch digitally. You know, because, I mean, we buy our tickets in advance.
Oh, we always do, yeah.
We do. And usually months in advance whenever sales are going on because we like to save money.
We are broke.
Yeah. Well, by haunt season, we are. So, you know, it helps us, but we're not your typical customer.
Yeah.
Your typical customer doesn't sit out in a hot garage every week for an hour and talk to people on the internet.
About haunting.
About the haunt industry.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. So we need to find more ways and products that we can sell online.
Yeah. Digital experiences. Now, we talked about that one that was doing the 30 days of terror. I'm very curious. If anyone actually did that, please let us know what that was like and about. I'm very curious. I opted not to do it, but I'm very curious what that was like and how that went. We need to see more of those digital experiences. I mean, we're like virtual escape rooms, other games, things like that. Because basically, more and more cash is changing hands online. Think about all the things, all the real money spent on digital items. If you have a phone, you probably buy games and do microtransactions in those games.
Yeah.
You're not buying anything physical.
No.
You're buying digital goods.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much 100% profit from a manufacturing standpoint.
Yeah. Okay, so that is something that we probably should brainstorm, more microtransactions for haunts.
Yeah. There are things that we should be able to do here and have not. We need to be able to do more with digital entertainment. This is something we need to think about because, our IRL status is important.
Yeah.
Can't ditch it. That's one of the things that's going to really set us apart as the world goes more digitally.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean we can ignore digital. We have to start incorporating it more and more and more. And I want to see more haunts doing those digital experiences.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, number 9. We're getting to the nitty-gritty. Got two more now. Think we can do this?
Yeah.
Number 9. This one's going to make me very unpopular for putting this in here, but it's the truth. Lobbying. Now, I want to be honest. I'm not a fan of lobbying. I think the fact that it is such a big thing is problematic. I think that it's so important to our democracy, speaks very ill of the state of our democracy. I'm very worried about it and its practice. But reality be reality. Right now, theme parks are doing a lot of lobbying. They have multiple trade organizations that lobby on behalf of theme parks, especially locally, like Orlando and Los Angeles, where you have all these major theme parks. They have bodies that specifically lobby to local county and city councils and local groups. They're very engaged, but haunted attractions don't really. We have trade organizations, but they don't do a lot of lobbying.
Right.
And the problem is, we are deeply impacted by the rules lawmakers at all levels make. And they oftentimes don't even consider us.
Yeah.
And we're seeing a lot of this right now. Think about this COVID-19 stuff. Have you gotten a single guideline directed at haunted attractions specifically? Have you seen one?
No.
You might have gotten guidelines for general business. You might have gotten guidelines for some kind of similar things.
Mm-hmm.
But no one's drafting guidelines for haunted attractions, so people like Fear Factory are trying to open up and do this halfway to Halloween, or they're getting ready for a Summerfest type thing or whatever.
Right, exactly.
And they don't know how to apply these rules, because a lot of the rules that may work for a restaurant or a bar or whatever make zero goddamn sense when applied to a haunted house.
Yeah.
So we need to make sure that at the very least we are thought of.
Yeah.
And that is difficult. That is tough. We need to get in front of lawmakers. And sadly, rightly or wrongly, love it or hate it, that's how you do it in this country.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really know how else to say it. It's truth. And I remember I went to a South by Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
And I attended a talk. I was there in my day job capacity, so it was about copyright. And Senator Ron Wyden was on the panel. and they were taking questions, and I said, Senator Wyden, this was about the SOPA PIPA debates. It was 2012 when this happened.
Right.
And all that craziness. I said, I have a question. SOPA PIPA and all that didn't really achieve any goals for smaller creators, and neither did its removal. It felt like the people like myself and the other smaller authors out there were just completely shut out of this conversation. What do we do? And this is Senator Ron Wyden, one of the most famous, you know, names, and love him or hate him, he's known for not kowtowing to lobbyists.
Right.
His exact line back to me was, y'all need to lobby.
No.
So if he's saying that, I feel like I can too.
No. No, I get that. And number 10, I get the last
one. Yes, you do. Take
10.
It. Take it.
This is something that we all need to do, is understand what our customers want.
Yes.
Because we think we know what they want. Like, I've heard many
interesting
haunters,
theories.
Yeah, I've heard haunters tell me, well, they want the big animatronic props, and they want to see, you know, movie-quality sets and all of that. But they want to have fun. As somebody who goes, has, you know, is able to go to haunts, you know, we're very lucky in that. We want to have fun. We want to have a unique experience.
Yeah.
We don't want actual psychological trauma. We don't want to be afraid for our life, for reals.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Margie Kerr, I'm bringing her up again, wrote the book about this, obviously, this exact issue. And also, we talked about it with Japes last week. Some Margie Kerr episode for us was 114, by the way.
Yes.
There's this trend to create scarier and more extreme haunts, and to focus on making more people pee themselves, to focus on being more terrifying. Mm-hmm. And that's not what customers want. The fun in a haunt is when you scare someone, but then they realize immediately that they're safe, and the scare was just purely a biological reaction.
Yeah.
Like, boom, oh my God, oh, I'm fine, I'm safe, I'm good. Because what happens is you spike that adrenaline, and then they feel safe, and they can enjoy the adrenaline and come down from it.
Right.
They can feel it, and they can laugh about it, they can smile about it, and they can really... It's the same reason people ride roller coasters. Mm-hmm. You want to get that adrenaline up, but you want to do it in a way where you know you're safe, you're not in actual danger. So I see these actors who are constantly like, oh, that person's scared, I'm going to keep attacking. They're on the floor, they're peeing themselves, and they're terrified, and they're screaming their little head off. And then they keep attacking. All you're doing is preventing them from feeling safe and enjoying the adrenaline, and actually probably possibly adding trauma. At some point, you've piled so much fear on top of them that it's literal trauma. And here's the thing. Customers that have fun return. Yep. They bring their friends. They bring the families. They bring the wife and them. They come on back.
Exactly.
People who have trauma, people who have bad experience, people who tap out because they can't make it through a haunt, they don't.
Yeah, word of mouth goes both ways.
Yes.
It can be positive and bring lots of people to you, or it can be really negative and have, you know, because there are places that I will not recommend. In fact, I will tell people, do not go to this place because it was such a bad experience.
Yeah. So, I mean, and one thing that Jabe said it last week that I really liked, and I think it was a valid point, was as you make your haunt edgier and edgier and edgier, you're catering to a smaller and smaller and smaller audience. And in an industry that's already seeing heavy consolidation, reducing the size of your potential audience is a dangerous move, to put it modestly. It's a big risk. You want to reach a broader audience. You want to bring more people in. You need to find ways to focus on helping people have fun rather than necessarily trying to be the edgiest, scariest, goriest, you know, most extreme haunt.
Right.
I mean...
And it's also being pointed out in our chat that they want to be fun, but they don't want to break the bank.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
Exactly. And I'll say this. The reason I go back, the reason every year, right the week before Halloween, I'm saying, this is the last fucking year. We're never doing this again!
Yeah.
I've said that damn near every year, I think.
Yeah.
I get pissed about something.
Yeah, we always have that discussion.
This is the last year? No, I don't know. I'm getting pissy about this. I don't want to do this anymore. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And we get that way. But then November 1st, I wake up and I'm like, I can't wait to start hunting again. I can't wait for next season.
Yeah, exactly.
And the reason is because I spent the previous nights watching people smiling their asses off as they leave our garage.
Yeah.
They're just happy as fuck. It's so amazing to think that we brought that much joy to that many people with nothing but our labor.
Yeah, exactly.
And by our, I mean the entire Haunt crew, obviously.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Our labor, we did it.
Yeah.
We as a group did it. And it's just, it's a crazy thought that, you know, with between two builders and maybe a dozen actors, we can make thousands of people happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
It is.
That's nuts. So,
well,
yeah.
It's crazy that we've got all these people joining us every week.
I know. So, but yeah, but maybe we should take a little less pride in all the code yellows and the tap outs we cause,
yeah,
and more pride in the smiles we cause.
Right.
All right.
And the memorable.
And the memorable moments.
Moments.
And the memorable.
Because, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite memories in Haunts are not the people that got the most scared.
No.
You know, they're the ones that I worry about. They're the ones that keep me up at night.
I love the people that we were able to twist the expectations on, or we got a good,
yeah,
reaction from, but a good reaction means they reacted and then moved on, and then,
yeah,
they were fine again. I think back to the stories of the people that got the most scared, like those girls that got trapped up against the wall,
mm-hmm,
one of our early seasons, and I look back on those with horror.
Yeah, exactly. Because
I look at that as A design failure,
yeah,
and B a failure on the part of us to adequately control the scare and the situation inside,
right,
the haunt. We've learned a lot since then. We've gotten so much better. We've not had an incident like that since, I don't think. Or not in recent years.
Yeah.
We've gotten a lot better. And a lot of that comes from better design and better actor training and an understanding of, you know, sort of the rules of engagement. But man, you know, haunts should be fun. We need to focus on making haunted attractions fun. And money will come. You,
mm-hmm,
know, people will always pay money to have fun.
Yeah.
People may or may not pay money to get ridiculously scared.
Right. Yeah, that's a very niche audience.
Yeah. So, anyways, that's the end of the 10. Do we have any final thoughts on the question?
Yes, we do.
All right. What do we got? What do we got? What do we got? What do we got?
Sam Farrell chimed in with he'd like more animatics in time of COVID.
Oh, yeah.
You know, learn how to do the animatronic props and set off all that stuff, which is... I have a feeling that a lot of people are going to be going that way. There are going to be fewer.
Yeah,
actors.
I do know, and I'm always tempted when I get a little extra cash to buy one of those,
mm-hmm,
simple pneumatic kits.
Right.
Like Fright Props, I think, has a few,
mm-hmm,
and things like that, just to kind of fuck around with it.
Yeah.
Not necessarily to build anything. I don't think I have anything in mind, but I kind of want to like explore it and see what I can build. Because, I mean, I think we could use some pneumatics, but we'd have to be careful about how we use them.
Right, exactly. And Tim Fowler said that he would like to be better at acting. He does builds and then steps back and watches.
Yeah, and
I can understand that too.
I understand that too. I mean, I'm not a good scare actor. I'm a good comedy front of house actor. I think I'm,
yeah,
pretty good at that, but I'm not a good scare actor.
Yeah.
I mean, in the rare haunts where I've been a true scare actor, I've always been a stealth scare actor because I do move abnormally quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not as much now that I'm 40. There's a few more pops and creaks and groans going on with those steps, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So maybe I shouldn't be a stealth actor anymore. But yeah, so yeah, I think that's some good stuff there. A lot of interesting things. But those are the 10 thoughts we have for what the haunt industry needs to do. These are all things that I think we can be thinking about now.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, like, even the ones I don't like mentioning the lobbying one, but now's an important time for that because there's going to be a lot of new regulations coming down that'll cover us this year and probably next that we need to have a say in.
Yeah.
We need to have a voice in what those regulations are. And a lot of it's happening on the state level, state and local level.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be getting in front of those lawmakers.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyways, thank you very much for joining us for the past hour. That seemed to go off relatively well. Not that many dropped frames. Cue.
Yeah, everyone said that it went great.
Excellent. Wunderbar. This has been Haunt Weekly. This was episode 255.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about 10 things that the haunt industry needs to do to grow. You can find more of us at hauntweekly.com. Facebook.com/hauntweekly is our Facebook page. It's also where we go live every Sunday at 8 p.m. Central Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Time, and if you live anywhere else, do your own math. I can't be, it's not that I can't be bothered, I can't do it. I am physically incapable of understanding time zones. It fucks me in my head knowing there are places in the future. Like, as I'm speaking, there are places that live in the future, and it bothers me. You can also find us at twitter.com/hauntweekly, where I'll post additional rants about time zones anytime now. While you're at hauntweekly.com, though, do check out hauntweekly.com/COVID-19, filled with interesting things that you as haunters can be doing. Updating the page as a living, breathing document. Check back regularly to see what new content has been posted there. Mm-hmm. You can also find us at youtube.com/hauntweekly. There's a YouTube channel. The entire archive exists there for your listening pleasure. Anything else? Yep. Okay, but until next time, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this was Haunt Weekly, episode 255. We will see you next time for episode 256, which I've done the maths. Divisible by 4, that means it's time to do
the news.
Lord help us. Lord help us. We'll see you guys next time.